Hello.
Hi, hello.
My name is Dana. I'll be taking care of you today. If you have any questions about the menu, please let me know.
I guess I do have a question about the chicken, if you could just tell us a little bit more about it.
The chicken is a heritage breed, woodland-raised chicken that's been fed a diet of sheep's milk, soy, and hazelnuts.
Okay, this is local?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to ask you just one more time, and it's local?
It is.
Is that USDA organic or Oregon organic or Portland organic?
It's just all across the board, organic.
The hazelnuts, these are local?
How big is the area where the chickens are able to roam free?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have exactly the same question.
4 acres. Mm-hmm. Give me just a second. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Great. This is nice.
Well, you're doing the right thing.
I'm too apologetic.
You are.
I drove way too slow here today, didn't I?
Yeah.
I am so weird with that gas pedal. I think just moves the whole vehicle forward now.
All right, so here is the chicken you'll be enjoying tonight.
You have this information. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. His name was Colin. Here are his papers, okay?
That's great. He looks like a happy little guy who runs around. A lot of friends, other chickens as friends. Putting his little wing around another one and kind of like palling around.
I don't know that I can speak to that level of intimate knowledge about him. They do a lot to make sure that their chickens are very happy.
When you say they, I mean, who are these people raising Colin?
It's a farm that's located about 30 miles south of Portland.
And you have a good relationship with this farm?
We do.
But is that some guy on a yacht who lives in Miami?
Oh, goodness, no.
Saying that he's organic?
It tears at the core of my being the idea of someone just cashing in on a trend like organic.
No, I know the type, no.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we're going to go check it out if you don't mind, just if you could hold our seats.
Oh, now?
Yeah, I will be right back. Just want to make sure.
Thank you so much, Dana.
Sure.
Live from the Genesis Art Supply Building on North Elston Avenue, just this side of the concrete-encrusted banks of the North Branch of the Chicago River, it's The Mike Novak Show. Still Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday on Q4 Radio and at MikeNovak.net.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
Nothing stopping him from running for president, except for the fear of getting shin splints. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Everybody ready for this?
I am.
3, 2, 1, here we go. One more time. Okay. Week 2. Put this, all of this in order here. I've got in the studio, well, from last week, I brought him back, Bill Turk, simply because he's helping me figure this out. So, hello, Bill.
Hello. Good morning.
Now I just have to figure out which headsets are mine. Ah, that's my volume. There we are. Bill Turk here, and the irrepressible and feverishly working at her smartphone, Beth Botts.
Howdy.
Hi, Beth. Wait. Beth gets a ding, and you get a beer ding as well.
What are the dings for?
I don't know. It's just, it's like radio tradition. That's all. It's so, there we go. I keep
because
missing it.
Because it's a little bit early in the morning for beer dings.
Not with Mr. Turk. See, you got to understand, for those who don't know, and there's probably some who listen to this, you might know from last week that W.C. Turk is the host of the Helter Skelter Show right here on Q4 Radio.
Mm-hmm.
AM 1680, but don't try to get it on your AM dial because it won't. And I've posted online, and if you're not listening already, you're not going to hear me say this, so it's kind of useless for me to say it. But I think we discovered that however you transmit this via the intertubes,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't play nice with Internet Explorer.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're trying to figure out how that works. But meanwhile, so if you've got any other browser, if you're listening right now and hearing it, you're probably on Firefox or you're on Google Chrome or Safari or something like that. There's others. Those are the ones that I know. My knowledge of inner tube stuff is sorely lacking. But there you go.
And I know Jason was working on that all week, and he was struggling with the player most of the week. So we'll get that fixed.
But, I know we will. Yeah. I know we will. And as we begin the show, let me get things out right away, because it only took me like 40 minutes last week to tell people what's actually on the program. That's not good radio. You're supposed to let them know early, right, Beth?
That's the theory, yes, Mike.
And Beth knows because she has hosted this program in the past. It's been a while.
Yes.
But I'm so glad to have you back. And you should know, and we'll start with that, because Beth, I've got her lovely book here right in front of me, and she has a copy of it as well. Month by Month Gardening, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. See, now, when you write this out, I don't know whether you put a colon after Month by Month Gardening or a dash or a comma. It's Month by Month Gardening, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. What do you do as an editor?
I personally do a colon. It's ambiguous on the publisher website, but
and you actually rephrased it differently on your own website.
I did?
Yeah.
My gosh. Somebody should get that woman a copy editor.
No. Well, I thought maybe that's the way you wanted it. So I did a similar thing on my website. And as I said, and if you don't know Beth, she has been doing garden writing for, I don't know, really a long time, forever.
Well.
Now, I mean, she started, you know, and given that you're only 24.
That's right.
You know, I don't know how.
I started as a baby.
Exactly.
In the cradle.
Writing stuff right away. Because she's written for the Chicago Tribune, for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Who else? Who else is on that list?
Oh, Country Gardens and Organic. They call it Organic Life now, and Chicagoland Gardening.
I said that.
And lots of other outfits.
Okay. And we are going to talk about her book, Month by Month Gardening, semicolon, Illinois.
Colon.
I heard semicolon in my head. Month by Month Gardening, colon, Illinois, Indiana, and Oahu. Ohio. If you have questions.
You left out the what to do each month to have a beautiful garden all year.
Well, that's the subtitle. That's
lady.
But you're right. It makes it the longest title in history.
It does. And that's why you can't fit it on my website. Yes. So this book came out on February 1st. It's a practically brand new book.
Wow.
And from Cool Springs Press.
That deserves a beer ding.
From Cool Springs Press, available wherever books are sold. And it's just basically designed to help you stay on track in the garden, in a Midwestern garden, according to me. And
life according to Beth Botts.
Life according to Beth Botts. And it has things like lists of my favorite perennials, and it has advice on lawn care, and it has advice on bugs and pests and diseases that you might come across. And, you know, it's basically according to me. So it's a fairly sustainable approach to Midwestern gardening. You know, personally, I'm really down on using pesticides and so forth in my garden. And I'm pretty much of an organic fertilizer girl. I'm not a hard line ideologue about anything.
No.
But
you're practical. You're actually very, very practical.
I'm a very pragmatic kind of gardener, but I don't like to put a lot of stuff on my garden unless it's absolutely necessary.
Okay. And what we're going to do is we'll talk about the book, but we'll also answer your questions. You can call in 312-985-7834. And if you didn't get that number, it's on my website, MikeNovak.net, but the number is 312-985-7834. We'll answer gardening questions. Or you can tweet to Mike now, or you can tweet to Beth with a question if you've got it.
You should probably tweet to Mike because Beth is not all that adept.
You're working that thing right now, though.
I'm really struggling to actually make the right numbers and letters come up on the little screen.
Ah,
here,
okay. So you can tweet at Mike Now, MikeNow, or go to the Mike Novak Show on the Facebook machine, and that's a little harder to track down for us, but we'll do it. Because, you know, one of the things, you've probably noticed this, Bill Turk, that with the fan pages, and they call them fan pages, or I call them professional pages, they bury, if comments come in, they're buried in the back, and you have to track them down, and it's, you know, they put them, like, way down the page, or you got to scroll down and find them. And
yeah.
It's not the easiest thing in the world, so...
That's why tags are important, hashtags, and you know, tagging other pages. It just helps give you a higher profile and a higher priority.
You know, I should be better at hashtagging. I hashtag on Twitter. I don't do it on Facebook as much. But that's not a bad idea. I'm lucky if the folk. You know, I'm happy that there are my listeners. Are figuring out how to listen to this show right now, you know, because they're used to just hitting that dial in the car and that's it. Now I'm saying, oh no, you have to go to a website and hit play, which really in the scheme of things is not that difficult.
They can also do that on their tablets and on their iPhones
exactly.
And plug that right into the.
Absolutely. So if you got a question, you can contact us by any of these means. And we will attempt to answer it. I mean, that's what we are a public service organization here. Hey, after all, Q4 Radio is a 501c3. And you can always donate to Q4. Not so much my show because I'm not a 501c3. That's why I have advertisers. It's a different scheme altogether.
And we are working, by the way, towards getting into, hopefully within the next year or so, getting into a large commercial transmitter. So that we can reach all those folks that aren't, you know, maybe
so you're serious
second
about
nature.
This is
we're very serious about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is good. I mean, yeah. I like the idea of 1680 being an actual radio signal.
We've got sights on a better stronger dial. 1680 is where we're at now with the low power.
Yeah.
But
so it would be a different frequency.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
Okay. Then you slap that frequency over the one that's postered here, which is slapped over the old frequency you used to have. So we just keep adding layers of frequency numbers until we get the one we
until
like.
Until we run out of room.
Until we run out of room. So folks, contact us if you want, and we will do what we can to answer your question. In the meantime, we will just talk about stuff like Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio gardening. Also today, in the second hour, we talk about the Good Food Festival and Conference. Now, that's coming up this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, at the UIC Forum. I have a couple of folks. Well, I have Mr. Head Honcho Good Food Festival himself, Jim Slama, who will be on the phone. And he's the guy who started this all, these many years ago. And the Good Food Festival has become the prime food festival in the country. It's the nation's oldest and biggest trade show focused on local and sustainable food, which is really cool. And we'll talk about the 3 days and what goes on in each of the 3 days. But you should know, I got to get the dinger ready. I have tickets to give away.
Now that's worth a ding.
That's worth a ding. I don't give a ding. And I'm going to try to give them away today. I'm not sure exactly how. You know, I might just take the fourth tweet. The fourth tweet that comes across my browser, so that's it. You know, I don't care when you get it out; it's when it shows up here.
While you're doing that, I want to give a quick shout out to Sandy in Joliet, who's listening to us this
Yay! Morning. I mentioned that Jim Slama will be here. Andrew Lutze, who's the co-founder and CEO of Local Foods Grocer and Distributor, and Bill, they're right down the block.
Yes, they are.
He's going to be live in studio if he can find his way into the building.
I'll back you up on that. Make sure that he gets in here comfortably.
Okay. Rick DeMaio Weather at 10:45. Always great to have Rick, you asked about that earlier. Was there any particular reason?
A couple of reasons. I was working social media, and I didn't want to jump to any conclusions. The other reason has to do with the plane crash in Russia the other day in Rostov-on-Don,
right.
That was due to high winds. Actually, I'd thrown up something up there that they told them to go around. And they had them in a holding pattern
for
2 hours.
Yeah.
So some in a snowstorm. So my feeling is that probably icing in the wings had something to do with that. Anyways, we've had a lot of really high wind days here in Chicago, and it seems like the frequency is higher than I recall. So I wanted to ask him if that's just a matter of perspective, or if we're actually getting a higher frequency of strong wind days?
That's a good question. Yeah. Those are excellent questions. And, of course, it's always good to have your own meteorologist around.
Always good.
And so you did the shout-out to Sandy and Joliet.
Hi,
Sandy. I got to do another shout-out. I got an email. This is so cool. Dear Mike, this came in the other day. Dear Mike. Actually, it came in St. Patrick's Day on the 17th. Dear Mike, my podcast catcher sprang into life, and you had appeared again. Well done. Good luck with the new show and also to the new radio station. I hope they fill their schedule soon. They are. They're working on it. Get podcasts out there for all. Regards, Raymond Gallagher, Glasgow, Scotland.
Wow.
Ooh, international radio star. Mike is an international radio star.
We had the call last week from Virginia. Oh, and by the way, we got a tweet.
From Bob.
Yeah, from Bob in Virginia, and I hope we've gotten that. Also, we got a tweet from Mighty House this morning. Where's the video feed?
We took it down temporarily, so we're retooling
all of
that.
Sorry about that, Mr. Cowgill.
Yes.
All right.
But we're just as lovely on the radio as we are in videos. So.
Nancy Barber just tweeted, so glad to hear you again. She gave me 4 smiley faces.
Yay.
So that's nice.
I remember Nancy from previously calling into the show.
Do you?
Oh, I paid very close attention to your show, Mike.
Wow.
Oh, I was a big
fan. You're scary. Are you a stalker as well?
I'm a big fan. Well, you know, there's a fine line. But.
And John R. is out there, and he's retweeting and liking. And we still haven't, again, do you want 2 tickets to the Good Food Festival and conference at the UIC Forum, send me a tweet or a Facebook post. I was trying Twitter, but you just have to send it to me either at the Mike Novak Show or at Mike Now. And all you need to do is give me the hashtag GFF Chai, and you'll get 2 tickets. All right. Let's start with some gardening stuff here because I got an email from my buddy, Dan Costa, at Vern Gore's Greenhouse in Hinsdale.
Ah,
you know those folks.
I do.
And one of the things he talked about, he says, "Hi, Mike, since the roses are starting to break into new growth, it's time to prune them."
Yes, it is. Roses bloom on new growth. So you do want to make sure that you cut the roses back. You cut all the dead wood off. The skinny wood. You don't, want to cut them all the way back to the ground because they do need a certain amount of their leaves to power their growth this year. But at the same time, unless it's a climbing rose or a rambling rose and you're planning to train it on a trellis, you don't want to cut it back a ways so that it'll put on lots of new twigs because the roses will actually be set at the ends of the new twigs that appear this spring.
Let's back up just a second here because I think there are folks who don't even understand that basic. And sometimes you really just got to work your way back. And you said it bloomed, this shrub blooms on new wood. What does that mean?
Well, there's basically 2 kinds of strategies for a shrub. It can either to get through a Chicago winter because we have these winters, I don't know if you noticed that, but we do. And
we barely had one this year.
We really got away with it. But A shrub can either put on new flower buds as soon as it's done blooming and then carry those flower buds through the winter so that it can bloom in the spring. That's one way. Forsythias do that, and a lot of your really early blooming shrubs do that.
Yeah, they call that blooming on old wood.
Right.
As in last year's.
As in last year's, as in the wood that was new last year, but this spring it's old wood. The other option is to wait and not even make your flower buds until this spring. And that way there aren't any flower buds to be threatened by, a really hard freeze or a really hard frost. And the plants that bloom on new wood, you can cut them back pretty hard in the winter. You can do your dormant pruning in the winter because they're not even going to build those new twigs that have those new flower buds until spring. So roses are in that category. Smooth hydrangea is in that category. A lot of shrubs are in that category, but a lot of the spring blooming shrubs, such as forsythia and most viburnums and lilacs, are in the old wood category. So you don't want to prune those shrubs until after they're done blooming. You want to prune those shrubs in the next, 2-3 weeks, right after their flowers have faded.
Which can be tricky too in terms of time, because sometimes if you wait even a few weeks too long, and you're cutting off the blooms from next year.
Exactly, and that you sort of have to pay a little more attention to spring blooming shrubs, and that's just the price that we pay for having all that lovely bloom come out in the spring. I mean, I've been seeing forsythia, and I've been seeing the early viburnums are starting to bloom. Out at the Morton Arboretum, where I have my day job, there was a magnolia blooming the other day. So the price that we pay for having that early spring flowering, soul-lifting cheeriness is that we have to pay a little bit more attention to when we prune those.
Well, crops. Okay, there's another good point. Since we're in March.
Yes.
And you write about this in the book, again, in your very practical way, and she's smiling, and she should, because it's you're very down to earth, you're easy to read, easy to follow, and the point you make in the book is the weather changes all the time, and we're not just talking about from one week to the next, we're talking about from one year to the next. So something that happened at this date, this is the 20th of March last year, and I don't remember, but I know 2 years ago it was frightfully cold. There was nothing going on.
2 years ago, it was frightfully cold. 2012, it was so warm in March. Everything was blooming.
Right. That was the year of the 80 degrees in March for like 8 days in a row.
Like 8 days. And that's, we love that. We're so happy to see all the flowers. But it was hard on the plants because there wasn't that much rain and there wasn't that much moisture in the soil. And all these plants started blooming early and sucked all the water out of the soil. There was actually starting to be the beginning of a drought situation in spring because things bloom so early. So we don't necessarily – it's not necessarily good for the plants to go to the extremes. Which I think the estimates I've heard is that we're running maybe – a week or so ahead of average this year, but you got to realize that the average time that things bloom is a compilation of years that were a little later and years that were a little earlier.
Well, yeah, let's take 2 decades worth of stuff and average it out,
and average
or
it
50
out.
Years or
but
whatever.
There's a lot of variation from year to year in all kinds of weather, especially in the Midwest. We have We're not as bad off as gardeners in like Iowa, but we have a pretty darn variable climate. And so you just sort of have to keep your knees loose. You just have to, watch your garden, actually pay attention to your garden and respond to what's actually happening in your garden. And one of the things that you really need to kind of pay attention to at this time of year is there's this temptation when you have a warm day Or when it's sunny, or when you see the first blooms in your garden, oh, God, I want to get out there and garden, man. I really want to get out there and start doing all of these things that I've been planning to do all winter. But the soil is not really ready for you to do that. The soil's probably wet. It may even still be frozen deep down. It hasn't
not this
really
year.
Drained yet. Yeah, but it still hasn't really drained yet. And if you dig on wet soil, in wet soil, or if you walk on wet soil, it can compact it, which means it can squeeze all the spaces out between the soil particles where you need air and water to be able to flow. And once you've compacted your soil, that's really hard to repair that. Mm-hmm. So the best thing to do is to really stay off the soil in your garden until you're actually, until the soil's actually dry enough for you to dig.
Wise words from Beth Botts. And one thing that I've learned over the years, and you know this, and folks don't, sometimes they fail to remember this when you're talking about compaction. The soil is comprised of basically four parts. 25% of it is air.
It needs to be air.
It needs to be air. 25% is water. About 40 to 45% is minerals, and 5 to 8, something like that, is organic matter.
In really good soil, 5 to 8% is organic matter.
In good soil, right, right, yeah. In good soil. I've seen people get their organic matter to 13%. That seems a little excessive to me.
It does seem a little excessive to me. And, you know, people, when you tell people that, they're amazed because we're constantly telling people to, you know, spread compost on your soil and spread mulch on your soil and raise the organic matter in your soil. And it astonishes them that the target is actually about 5%. But you need those. You need all of the other components in the soil, too. You need the mineral particles, and you need the air, and you need the water. You need the right balance and the right mixture in your soil to have so that your plant roots can find their way through the spaces between the soil particles. That's, you know, in compacted soil, the roots actually can't physically push their way through. So, you're looking for a kind of balanced, reasonable sort of soil ecosystem down there.
That's Beth Botts. And you mentioned that your day job is with the Morton Arboretum. We should probably – wait. First of all, we got to give them a ding because they'll be mad at us if we don't mention them at some point. What do you do over at the Morton Arboretum?
I'm a writer at the Morton Arboretum. I write a weekly column for the Morton Arboretum that appears in the Chicago Tribune. I haven't actually checked this morning to see whether it appeared because
– You don't know? They don't – sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't?
It usually does. But, you know, who knows? I was in the newspaper business for a long time, and, you know, Mike, in the newspaper business, stuff happens.
I know.
So it's probably – we could actually look that up on
Why
the
don't you,
on the,
she'll do that.
On the interweb here
and
find out.
While you're looking on the interwebs, this show is broadcasting – we got a special broadcast this Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wanted to make that programming note so that so people who are listening now don't miss the show next week, even though we're going to rebroadcast the show on Sunday at its regular time to hear you live. You're going to be preempting my show on Saturday from 11 until 1.
At the Good Food Festival and Conference down at the UIC. So I hope folks will come to the and that will be 11 to 1, as he said, and come on down to the forum at UIC. There's not a protest this time. It's just folks having fun with food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really it's like a party every year, the Good Food Festival at the UIC, especially the Saturday. Now, they have Thursday and Friday as well, and that's more policy and business end of it. And then Saturday are the various workshops and chef demos and booths and products and folks just having a great time, and it's really a lot of fun. You can go to my website, mikenovak.net, to find out about the Good Food Financing and Innovation Conference. That's Thursday. Good Food Trade Show and Industry Conference is Friday. But the Good Food Festival is Saturday, all day Saturday. And the best place to go to find out all of this is their website, goodfoodfestivals.com. Goodfoodfestivals.com. The way the schedule works is Saturday, next Saturday, the Mike Novak Show, preempting the Helter Skelter Show live from the Good Food Festival from 11 to 1. And then on Sunday, I'm back here 9 to 11 with my regular show. So I'm back to back with live shows this coming weekend. Mm-hmm. And I thank you, Mr. Turk, for allowing that to happen.
Good stuff. We need to support great radio, and you definitely are the top of that pyramid, buddy.
So are you in the trib this morning, Beth?
Well, I am in the trib this morning. I have a complicated professional life, so I am definitely in the Tribune as a freelance writer with a story on new plant introductions for this year. And it's very colorful and has pretty plants in it. And is definitely worth reading. And
but the other story is, since
I do not have a paper and the interweb is apparently not fully stocked, I am not really sure whether the Morton Arboretum column also appeared. So perhaps someone out there who has a paper copy of the Chicago Tribune.
You should have picked one up on the way in.
Well, there was one on my doorstep, but I was rushing. I was rushing to get to the radio studio so that I would be prompt and bright-eared and bushy-tailed to be on the radio, and I did not pick up the newspaper.
And you actually got here before I did, so yeah. There you go.
So if there's someone out there who has a paper copy of the Chicago Tribune, please turn to the Life Plus Style section and tell us if we're in the newspaper this Sunday.
The Life Plus Style. Used to be the gardening section.
There once was a home
and
garden section.
There once was a home
yes.
and garden section.
But,
in
you
the
know,
trip.
Stuff happened to the newspapers, Mike.
I know. A lot of stuff has happened to the newspapers. By the way, our buddy Cassandra West is listening. Hey, Cassandra.
Hi, Cassandra.
How are you? She responded to your post. All right, let's get some. You know what? I'll tell you what we will do right now is we we'll take a short break.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakening features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Wharf. Killer asparagus was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work, and so am I.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Raven Gosplach, my favorite holiday dish. Thank you, Mr. Wharf. Mr. Data, options?
It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener.
I prefer my asparagus with a side of patach kakach. Mr. Wharf, are you joking?
Actually, Captain, I believe he is choking.
The Mike Novak Show on Q4 Radio and 1680 AM, though not really quite at 1680 AM yet. I just keep saying that because I know there are folks who have tried to listen to it there, and it doesn't happen there.
But it's also streaming at Q4.org.
Right, and that's Q-U-E, the numeral 4.org. Thank you. And you can find that at MikeNovak.net. You just go right to that page, my home page, and click on the link, which is right at the top on the right side, and you can listen to the show. And it's the easiest. It says, listen now, and I hope folks do that. Beth Botts is in the studio with me. We're talking about her book, Month by Month Gardening, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And you were out in your own garden yesterday, and speaking of March and things you do, what were you doing in your own yard?
Well, I was not doing any of the things that were on my weekend to-do list, which had 23 things on it that I did not do.
Because you were in your yard.
I went out to the garden because it's nearly always a better thing to do,
it's
if
more
not a
fun.
Smarter thing
yeah.
to do than doing anything on your to-do list. So I was out there, and I raked a lot of leaves away from my beds. In the fall, I usually just rake the autumn leaves over the perennial beds and call it mulch. But then in the spring, you know, sometimes if there's a thick layer of leaves, the little crocuses and the perennials and everything can't quite push their way through all that. And so I raked to, I mean, I'm not compulsively tidy. This is, everybody's laughing. I am so far from compulsively tidy.
Wait, but I'll tell you something. That, you actually write about it in the book, that being compulsively tidy is a bad thing because it doesn't help your soil.
It doesn't help your soil. You want to have, if you think about the way plants grow in nature, they're always growing in a layer of last year's leaves and stalks and everything, and all that stuff is constantly being broken down by all the little microorganisms and critters that live in the soil, and it's enriching the soil around that plant's roots. So if you tidy up your garden and you just ruthlessly rake away everything that was on the soil, that can't happen. So I was sort of lightly raking away the leaves. I wasn't raking away all the leaves, but I was raking away enough of the leaves so that the crocus foliage could get through. And I have to say there were places where I had daffodil foliage that was so buried in leaves, it was bleached. It was yellow. It was almost white because the chlorophyll wasn't getting any sunlight. And it looked like that sort of fancy French asparagus that's, you know, sort of bleached out. So I got the leaves off there so that foliage could get some sunlight and turn green and be happy and healthy. And I was noticing all the things that are really burgeoning in my garden. I was noticing buds on the service berries and the other spring blooming shrubs. And I was looking at my bulbs and thinking, you know, I don't have enough really early spring bulbs in my garden. And
why is that, Beth?
Well,
you know, people have been talking about that.
I know. But part of it is because I have a really shady garden.
Oh, that's a good reason, actually.
And that means that things that I plant that are, you know, it says early in the bulb catalog, it's actually going to bloom a little later in my garden because my garden doesn't warm up in spring as fast as a full sun garden would, because my garden's mostly in the shade. But, you know, I do have some things. But another thing that I was noticing, and this is something I talk about in the book, is, you know, take pictures, take notes. If you take pictures with your smartphone, that has a date on it. And a nice collection of pictures of what's going on in your garden can almost amount to a gardening journal. Or at least it can be a really good supplement to keeping written notes. And one of the things that I noticed is when I do plant early crocuses and things and irises and things like that, which are beautiful close up. I mean, they're really this wonderful color of blue or this really wonderful color of purple. And I tend to like those kinds of colors. But they don't show up very well against the brown leaves in the early spring.
It's true.
It's true. And so the note that I was making to myself is next year I need to plant more, or next fall when it's time to plant bulbs, I need to plant more early yellow crocuses and early white crocuses and glory of the snow. I noticed that the glory of the snow really makes an impact if I would plant a lot more
glory
of those.
What's glory of the snow? I should know this, but I don't.
I'm not sure how to pronounce this, China Doxa or Kiana Doxa.
Oh, that. Yeah, that's why you use Glory of the Snow.
That's
I didn't know it was called Glory of the Snow. Yeah.
And
nobody can pronounce it.
Nobody can pronounce that.
Hi, we have a phone call. Hi, who is this?
Hi, it's Nancy Bender in Chicago. I don't have a gardening question or anything, but I just wanted to let you know that I have you on TuneIn Radio.
You do?
Yeah, Q4 is on TuneIn Radio, and it's fabulous.
Oh, my goodness.
All I had to do was hit that this morning, and there you were.
We got to add that to the list of ways.
That's why I called, because you weren't telling anybody.
I wasn't.
Last week you said you were trying to get it on TuneIn.
Right.
And so I loaded it, and there you are.
I'll be darned. I had no. Mr. Turk, did you know we're on TuneIn Radio?
I wasn't aware that it had just kicked in. We did apply for it. I was waiting for a notification, but apparently they started us up before the notification began. I'm very happy.
Well, that's why I called in, because I was so excited. Oh. Because I hate having to go to someone's website and do all that stuff
on
my smartphone.
And I was having trouble yesterday on my smartphone getting the signal from the website. But I have the TuneIn app on my phone, and now it's going to be a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a piece of cake. There you were.
I am downloading the TuneIn app on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm. So all you folks listening, and you know, Nancy.
So, and if I can do it, anybody can do it, really.
That's true. If Beth can do it.
That's me. Yeah. I don't do Twitter. I don't do Facebook.
You don't?
I don't do any of that.
All right,
so
well, let me ask you a question.
It was perfect.
Nancy, are you going to the Good Food Festival? Would you like a
couple?
Yeah,
and I have tickets.
No!
And we were going to come and stop and say hello, too.
Oh, great.
Nice.
I'll tell you what. Do you have any friends? I would be happy to give you a couple tickets that you could give to a couple of friends.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, thanks, Nancy, for calling. And that's just excellent, excellent information. I'm so glad.
Well, I can't tell you how happy it makes me because, man, I stopped listening to that other gardening show because I was so tired of hearing about nematoids.
Nematodes.
Oh my God.
Nematodes.
It's like, I want to hear about Chicago.
Nematodes.
Or ginkgo biloba. How's your ginkgo biloba tree doing out there?
Yeah, exactly.
See, I'm taking the high moral ground on this one. You guys can make fun all you want.
I had two rats in my yard in the winter, and luckily I feed the birds, and everybody kept telling me, stop feeding the birds. That's why you're feeding the rats. And I have a local peregrine, and boy, that peregrine took care of my rats.
That's good. You know, I was out in my yard a couple of summers ago, and I'm looking up on the telephone pole in the alley right at the top, and there's some kind of raptor. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Some kind of hawk. And as I'm watching it, it dives into the next yard, grabs a rat, and flies back up. This was I thought, where's my video camera right now? That would have been the coolest thing. But to actually see them do that is pretty amazing.
I'm up in Rogers Park. We've got a couple of families in the neighborhood now that have just come back. I hadn't seen them in the longest time. And we've got a couple of wild turkeys running up along the metro tracks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, wild turkeys are making a big comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are they
this
really?
Peregrine's been around for years, and you know, I've seen it snow in my backyard feathers, and I'm like, where's the you know what why is it snowing in March? And it turned out it was having, you know, breakfast.
How cool is that?
With all those, you know, feathers coming down. It was a pigeon, I don't have pigeon problems either.
Okay. Well, Nancy, thank you so much. Send me that information, okay. And we'll get you a couple more tickets to the Good Food Festival, and I will see you on Saturday.
Okay. See you there. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm very excited.
How cool is that, that we are now on TuneIn?
TuneIn, yeah.
More calls we can take at 312-985-7834. You see how easy it is. It's just like real radio. it is real radio. I think that's sometimes the apps are the easiest way to go with a
one-stop shopping.
That's it. Yep. Okay. I got another. Okay, this will lead us down a rabbit hole.
Okay.
Because Dan Costa wrote again, and because he wanted one more tip out there, and I'm
Alrighty.
Interested in your take on this. He says it's time to start putting down pre-emergent weed preventers. Soil temperature 4 inches down is about 54 degrees. The warmth will move up, and weed seeds will begin to germinate soon. You need to have the pre-emergent down before that germination process begins. I'm not a fan of pre-emergence.
Let's make it clear to people what a pre-emergent is.
Yes, let's do that.
A pre-emergent is a kind of herbicide that prevents seeds from germinating. And the reason that you would put down a pre-emergent would be if you had a lot of weeds like dandelions last year, and you're afraid that they scattered a lot of weed seeds, and you want to prevent those seeds from germinating this year. I don't use them. I don't have a very large lawn, and I pretty much hand dig all my weeds.
Now you said lawn. Most people use pre-emergence on their lawn. And
right. This is basically a lawn issue. This is if you're trying to keep your lawn.
And lawns are a whole and you're talking about rabbit holes. Boy,
that's right. We could go down. That's a rabbit hole we could go down. Now, there is one kind of pre-emergent herbicide that is organic and natural and will probably do has less risk of messing up your soil ecosystem.
I know what you're going to say.
Corn gluten meal.
All right, let's stop right there, though, because from what I've read recently, the jury is really out on that.
The jury is out on corn gluten meal.
The efficacy of corn gluten meal.
The thing to remember about organic pesticides, organic herbicides, organic insecticides is that just because it's organic doesn't mean it's not a poison.
Yeah, but from what I hear is it's not that it's a poison, is that a lot of people say it doesn't work.
It certainly does not work the way your chemical pre-emergent pesticide would. You have to apply it for several years, and it doesn't provide that fast, satisfying kill that you get from the synthetic pesticides. There's almost never a one-to-one organic substitute for a synthetic pesticide. So corn gluten meal requires patience. It requires an investment of time. It generally, sort of builds up over 2 or 3 or 4 years on your lawn. It does have a little bit of fertilizer. It'll break down because it is a plant substance. It will break down in your lawn and provide a little bit of fertilizer. But it's not going to have the same immediate effect that the commercial synthetic. Well, I mean, corn gluten meal is commercial, but it's not going to have the same effect as the synthetic pre-emergent insecticide. The other alternative is if you don't have that big of a lawn or you're just not that sensitive to the weeds, I just patrol my lawn a few times a year with my weeder and I just pop them up. And I find that my lawn's
what?
Probably 1,000 square feet. And if I do that 2 or 3 times a year, I can pretty much keep things under control without putting anything on the lawn. And that way I also don't kill things that are kind of nice to have, like clover. Which, I like having a mixed lawn.
Okay, let's start on clover. All right, some people say, call me, write to me, how do I get rid of clover? And my question is, why do you want to get rid of clover? It's putting nitrogen into your soil. It is it's a legume. It's a nitrogen fixer. So it's taking the nitrogen out of the air for free, putting it into your soil for free. Why do you consider that a weed?
Well, a lot of people have come to consider it a weed over the last few decades because this aesthetic developed.
Okay, and can we say once and for all, they're wrong?
We can say they're wrong.
I can say it.
I like a more diverse lawn that has more different kinds of plants in it that are interacting with the soil microorganisms and things in more different ways. I think that's healthier. One thing about clover is it tends to be an indication that your soil doesn't have a lot of nitrogen in it.
Yep.
And so you want to make sure that you are – lawn grass is basically all leaves, and it needs a lot of nitrogen to really do well. That does not mean you should go out and buy a big bag of you know, blue stuff from the
That's what I call it, too. I'm glad you say that.
There are organic vine fertilizer.
Blue stuff.
Putting down – first of all, I top dress my lawn with compost in the spring.
Let's stop right there because that's a treatment that I recommend to people, and they look at you funny.
Here's a thing that I think a combination that works really well is you wait until the soil is ready to be worked. Don't be walking on your lawn when it's wet because you'd be compacting it. But if you aerate and then you follow that up with an overseeding, and I like to overseed with a tall fescue mix because it's more drought tolerant and more resilient than Kentucky bluegrass, and then you scatter compost over that, the compost will act as mulch for the grass seed. The lawn has just been aerated, and what that means is you've gone over it with a machine, or you've hired somebody to go over it with a machine.
Do you do it yourself, or do you hire somebody?
I hire somebody.
And I was amazed because I read this in your book that you do this every year faithfully?
I do this every year because it's fighting that soil compaction. It's getting air. What the machine does is it sort of pulls plugs of soil out of the lawn, and that creates channels for air to get down into the lawn. It's just like aerating your compost heap. And then if you follow that up with overseeding, and then you follow that up with compost, and you water it, the compost will act as sort of mulch for the grass seed. The grass seed will fill in any bare patches. And you've aerated your lawn, and you've added nutrition to your lawn. Now, I do fertilize
and some people,
my lawn.
Let me add in here. Some people say, well, I'll do that with peat moss. There's no nutrition
nutrition in peat moss.
Okay.
No, you want to use compost. And, you know, I use my own compost. I sift it so you don't have big clods and clumps and stuff on your lawn. And, you know, everybody looks and says, oh, my God, it's so horrible. It looks like my, you know, there's just junk and dirt all over my lawn, and it'll be there for a couple of days, and then the earthworms and everything else will take care of it. Don't worry about it. I leave the clippings on my lawn. You use a mulching mower, leave the clippings on your lawn, and then you're recapturing all the nitrogen that was in those leaf blades you cut off. And then I do fertilize my lawn.
I have a tiny, tiny lawn.
Yeah.
But I find it's not worth it.
It's not worth it to you if it's a little tiny lawn. But I do use an organic lawn fertilizer like once a year in the early fall. And that gives the lawn, you know, enough supplemental nitrogen to be really healthy. And if your lawn is growing really well, then that'll choke out a lot of the weeds. And, you know, you won't have as much weed invasion coming in. And you want to... You'd probably be able to manage it with just hand pulling.
Okay. That's Beth Botts. She is the author of Month by Month Gardening, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Now, you can get this pretty much anywhere. It's one of those
Books are sold. You can get it online. You can.
Is it sold locally here? If you got it in the.
It's sold locally. It's certainly sold at the Morton Arboretum bookstore, a lot of other bookstores. If your bookstore is not selling it, then by all means, demand that they stock it, demand that they order it for you, demand that they stock it for all our local Chicago area gardeners.
And by the way, a couple of tweets, and you're welcome to stay for the rest of the show. We're going to get on to the Good Food Festival here in the second hour. You know, it's kind of up to you.
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, that'd be great. So she has now officially become co-host of the program today, Beth Botts. And it's can I tell you how great it is to have you back and have us two sitting here and talking gardening?
You how great it is to have you back on the air, Mike?
I appreciate that. Snappy J Dog tweeted, "Ooh, how can I get good food ticks?" Snappy J Dog, you got them. All right, just write to me. See, that's how easy it is. I'm just giving away. I'll get you a couple of tickets there. Casey Tomato wrote, "I like clover too. It will, however, attract bunnies." And given that Easter is next weekend.
See, that's why you need a coyote.
I guess so. All right, we need to take a break here and get to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. We're going to be talking Good Food Festival and Conference, and I hope that all of you are part of that conversation. This is the Mike Novak Show on Q4 Radio 1680 AM. Who's just wandered into the studio. I'm very happy to have Andrew Lutze, who is the co-founder and CEO, Local Foods grocer and distributor at www.localfoods.com. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here, and thanks for being part of the Good Food Festival. Now what I'm going to do right here...
Mike, I'm great.
Great. I'm so glad put those headsets on there, Andrew. Andrew's here in the studio. Beth Botts is here in the studio. Jim Slama, he's the kingpin. He is, do they bow to you when you enter the room, Jim?
Oh, come on, Mike.
Do they throw food at you? Maybe they
we'll
do
have
that.
None of that.
No, actually, Jim is the guy.
Actually, Rob Levitt brings me sausages.
Okay. Well, you know, and I would hope apples.
Some butcher and larder.
And, anything you need. If it's local food, Jim Slama is the guy behind Family Farmed, and they put together the Good Food Festival. How many years is it now?
12 years.
Wow. You're like the biggest and the best in the country right now.
There's really nothing like it.
And I've watched it evolve because I first came to it, I think, I want to say, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. And you've moved around in different venues, but now you've kind of found a home at the UIC Forum. And it's a great place, and I'll tell you – especially on Saturday, I know we're going to talk about some of the other stuff you've got going here, but Saturday, the Good Food Festival is just so much fun, and there's just so much energy in the room. People need to take advantage of that and come on by, and that's why I'm giving away ticks today to folks who basically they ask for them. I'm giving away some tickets until I run out.
All right.
So
we want to get a lot of people there.
Yeah.
We got the Easter Bunny coming.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Come and get your kid's picture taken with the Easter Bunny.
You know what?
And dye some eggs naturally, and then watch Rob Lovett do a demo on curing hams.
Okay. And that's
Well, that's a pretty good Easter themed Saturday, right?
It really is. Yeah. Yeah, I want to get the Easter. I'll get the Easter Bunny over to my booth where I'm going to be broadcasting live. From 11 to 1, we got to get the Easter Bunny.
We'll be tweeting that photo, Mike.
Yeah, it'll haunt me forever.
Or you could get Mike to wear the Easter Bunny suit.
No.
Oh, you can take over from Kathy. You can have the afternoon. Kathy's kind of tall like you, so I bet it'll fit you.
You know, it's not a suit. There's a real Easter bunny now for those.
Oh, that's exactly.
You don't want
what
to say that. Don't say that, especially a week before Easter. Let's talk very briefly, Jim, about how the overall conference works. You've got 3 days. The Thursday is financing and innovation. Friday is trade show and industry. And then Good Food Festival on Saturday. But most people know that the Saturday is you've got the booths and you've got the demos and you've got the seminars. You know, the chefs are doing their thing and people get to look at products and try different things and see what they like and schmooze. And so it's that is just really, really fun. But the other 2 days are a little more serious. Tell me about the first 2 days.
Sure. Well, Thursday's our financing conference, and, you know, so, and actually this is the first time we're having a cabinet member speak. Secretary Vilsack of the U.S. Department of Agriculture is speaking, and, you know, they've been a great partner. They've funded us to train 9,000 farmers in food safety and post-harvest handling and all those other things over the past few years. Really an amazing partner. They're also a supporter of the conference. They supported us to launch the Good Food Accelerator, which is a training program for food and farm entrepreneurs to help them scale up. So we've got a full lineup of amazing speakers, including Andrew Lutze from Local Foods telling, you know, their remarkable story. But so we have entrepreneurs, we have investors, you know, USDA, other senior leaders in addition to the secretary. And then we have six entrepreneurs who are pitching their businesses for to investors, and hopefully they'll get funded. So, you know, it's all really about the business of good food. You know, how do we help scale up the local supply chain? And, you know, in the last few years, businesses associated with the conference and also with the accelerator have raised over $23 million in capital. So it's actually been a very successful program. And, you know, we plan on continuing that success with the businesses that are pitching this year.
I can also jump in and say that I've met two of my business partners through Family Farm, Jim Slama, one of them just networking at the event. So from a B2B perspective on that Thursday and Friday, if you're just looking to meet like-kind businesses, this is the place to be.
That's a really good point, is that you know, you talk about having a concentration of like-minded people in the room on Thursday and Friday, mm-hmm. And I imagine you sit at one of these seminars, get great ideas, but you also zero in on the people speaking or the people you talk to before and afterward and get a sense of who they are and how you might partner with them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, for me, sometimes there's more going on behind the curtain where people aren't speaking. That's where a lot of the action happens, too.
Yeah. By the way, that is Andrew Lutze. He's with Local Foods Grocer and Distributor. Now, you're just down the block here on Elston, off of Elston. So this is like you're in the hood here.
Yeah, I live half a mile north, and I work a half a mile south of here. So right in my sweet spot.
So tell me a little bit about your business and your fellow businesses that are in the building.
Yeah, so Local Foods is at Elston and Willow, just off of Elston. And localfoods.com, you can find us there. We're in a 30,000-square-foot entrepreneurial center for lack of a better way of putting it. And Local Foods is a three-year-old business. We've been distributing locally grown food for that time period. We work with about 150 farmers throughout the Midwest and then distribute those products to restaurants, caterers, schools, institutions, hotels. And we really started the business out of the concept of providing sales, marketing, and distribution businesses for farmers. And what we found out is that we've got this great service that we're providing to our farmers and to our wholesale buyers. Let's bring that service straight and directly to the consumer. So about 8 months ago, we opened up a public market butcher shop and cafe, which provides meat, fresh produce, a restaurant, and grocery for of locally grown products. And then along the way, over the course of the last three years, our investors have launched two new businesses. One's called Mighty Vine Tomatoes, also known as the best tomatoes in Chicago all year round. And another one's Hand Cut Foods, which is a corporate and school food service management company, really revolutionizing the way large numbers of people eat in schools and at company cafeterias.
So you do a little bit of everything there. I mean, you've got wholesale, you've got retail, you've got the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, almost. And you say some of these people are folks you've met at the Good Food Festival?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my two primary business partners on the day-to-day operations are Dave Rand and Ryan Kimura. And Dave was a direct connection through Jim Slama, just networking. And then Ryan, we were at the Friday trade show and bumped into each other, started talking, and the rest is history.
That's great. I bet you like to hear those stories, Jim.
Yeah, we love those stories. And that's really what it's about. It's networking, connecting people, connecting with trade buyers, connecting with money, and it's been awesome. You know, one other thing, Andrew, don't forget Stock Cafe. I was just there yesterday, and, you know, it's such an awesome retail store. It's got an amazing selection of local foods really across, you know, the gamut from food artisans to, you know, to Rob's Butchers, Public and Bread. And also they've got this cafe there with just amazing food. And in fact, the chef, Abra, is on a panel on Friday at the trade show along with the James Beard Foundation. You know, the James Beard Foundation produces the Oscars of the restaurant industry. And so they're doing a workshop on sustainability in restaurants, not only with Abra, but also with Rick Bayless and Paul Fairbach from Big Jones and Bruce Sherman from North Pond Cafe. So real rock stars in the Chicago restaurant world, along with local foods and James Beard Foundation. So, you know, very exemplary of the kind of the direction this movement is going in with bringing in, you know, high level strategic partners like James Beard, along with, you know, chefs and local foods who, in terms of, you know, the distribution of local foods to the restaurant industry, really is doing it better than anybody in Chicago now, I'd say, for local and sustainable foods.
So my favorite part of some of the panels is always the panelists you can talk to after. So
yeah,
if you want an opportunity to shake the hand of Paul Fairbach or Bruce Sherman, go to that panel and run up to the front right when it finishes.
You know, I got to thank you, Jim, and Grant as well, because last year I got to interview Paul Fairbach for the podcasts I was doing at the time. Boy, what an interesting guy he is. And I went up to his restaurant in Andersonville and we chatted, and his take on Southern cuisine is really fascinating. And it was just a joy to talk to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a smart guy and he does things the right way. I know he buys, you know, whole hogs and that is really a service to the farmers when you're buying the whole animal. Takes the burden of them having to figure out how to sell, pork chops here, the bellies there and kind of piece all that together. And so whenever chefs are working that way, I'm always, one to try and get out and make sure people know that.
That's actually, by the way, that's Andrew Lutze from, local foods, a grocer and distributor here in Chicago. Jim Slama, president, Family Farmed, and the founder of the Good Food Festivals is on the phone. You just brought up something, Andrew, that I guess a lot of people are not aware of. I wasn't aware of that. This is a little bit of inside knowledge about buying and selling of local food. And the idea that buying the whole hog, and there's that phrase, the whole hog, is very different from buying it a piecemeal.
Yeah. So, you know, my family is farming in Wisconsin and organic pastured cattle, hogs, and poultry. And we have our own markets up in the northern Wisconsin area, and so that allows us to sell most of our products. But most farmers throughout the Midwest, if you're a cattle farmer, you're trying to sell your beef, and if someone's not buying the whole animal, you've got to find a ground beef buyer, you've got to find a steak buyer, you got to find someone who's going to buy the roasts, and then you got to figure out how to make sure they're all doing that every week so that you're not inventorying a large part of the animal. And therein lies some of the challenges of our small and mid-sized producers here in the Midwest.
Which gets me to a question, Jim, about small and mid-sized folks who want to come to Family Farm and want to come to the Good Food Festival in one of these conference days. How much of this is directed at them? Because you've grown very big, and you've got a lot of heavy hitters there, but a lot of the food production is small and medium-sized businesses. How do you accommodate them?
Well, I mean, that's why we launched this 12 years ago as a trade show for local, sustainable, and organic farmers. You know, so, you know, that trade show was 50 farmers, restaurants, Whole Foods became our partner. They've been our partner ever since. You know, Paul Kahn from at the time, it was just Blackbird, gave a keynote. Whole Foods gave a keynote. And, you know, those small farmers have been part of the core of the vendors at Good Food ever since. And this year, I think we've got more farmers than any other type of vendor. So they're definitely there. And if, you know, producers are interested, even if they don't have a booth, they should still come just to check it out and check out the vibe. And because honestly, there's a lot of movement towards how do we scale up to meet the demand for good food from larger scale buyers. And, you know, that's one of the things that Local Foods is doing. You know, there's some other distributors in town that are also you know, serving that marketplace, you know, which is great because 99% of food flows through wholesale channels. You know, 1% is direct, farmers market, CSA, other things. Everything else goes through restaurants or food services or supermarkets or, you know, other places where it's larger scale. We need to figure out how do we get things to that marketplace efficiently. And so for producers who are interested in, okay, well, I do two farmers markets and that's enough, but I want to grow my business, then, you know, they need to meet somebody like Local Foods who's serving these wholesale markets or some of the other distributors who are serving these larger scale markets and figure out, you know, how do I work my way into that supply chain, make it efficient for me so that we can make money and get this great food to a whole variety of customers. And that's really what Friday the Trade Show is all about.
I want to give you a chance, Jim, to talk about the some of the other panels that you think have some great things going on and might attract some of the local producers and farmers.
Well, you know, we've got a whole variety of them. We've got one on meat. Andrew's partner, Dave Rand, is on. He's on it with, you know, folks like Greg Gunthorpe, you know, who's been a longtime pioneer in doing sustainable meat production, supplies a lot of pork and chicken and other things to Rick Bayless. Louis John Slagle, who's, you know, name is on menus across the city. We've got other panels on, you know, on how to scale up and moving into food service. There's school food panels and best practices in school food because a lot of people are interested in that. We're trying to get more schools to actually attend and learn about this and build some relationships. And then there's a whole policy track that day as well with both policymakers, advocates, you know, lots of nonprofits who are working on food policy issues. So, you know, that's exciting. You know, there's another very interesting thing going on at noon. The Food to Market Challenge is hosting a session at noon. And this is, basically a foundation in Chicago, Kinship Foundation, paired with the Chicago Community Trust, is offering $500,000 grant to the winner of a challenge on who's going to develop the best new system to increase the supply of sustainable local food to the Chicago region. So, you know, they're going to be talking about that. And if, you know, get a great idea, and also a network, at least one producer has to be part of it. You know, opportunity for a group of businesses to get a pretty significant infusion of capital to grow that business. So I think that's going to be a very exciting part of Friday as well.
Yeah, I noticed that Friday's just got a lot going on. As a matter of fact, if you click on the Friday, you got to make sure you notice that there are two tabs. There's the industry breakout sessions, and then there's the policy sessions. I didn't even notice that at first, and I go, oh, my goodness, there's a whole wealth of other things going on. And one of them is something we talked about on the show last week with Rebecca Osland from the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, which is Our Seeds Are in Need, which is at 10:45 on Friday. And just this week, I got an email from Rebecca. What we talked about last week is how seed library swaps were in danger of being overregulated by state seed laws all across the nation. And there was a crackdown in Pennsylvania. There was a crackdown in Minnesota. And, you know, the seed swaps are just people coming in and to seed libraries, and they borrow seeds, they grow the plants, they harvest the seeds, and they bring them back. And they were going to be overregulated and regulated out of existence. And just this week, the state of Pennsylvania clarified that seed libraries and other non-commercial seed exchanges are not subject to licensing, labeling, and testing requirements required of commercial seed distributors. So that's a victory, and I wanted to do that update because folks might have been listening to that conversation we had last week, and it's also on my podcast. And it's nice to hear, like, 3 days later, the state of Pennsylvania comes through. I thought you'd be interested in that. And also, another big food issue that happened this week is the DARC Act failed to pass the U.S. Senate. Which would have challenged GMO labeling laws in individual states. And I was wondering if Andrew or Jim, either of you, has a reaction to that.
Huge victory for people who want transparency in their food. You know, Big Food is really going after the Vermont labeling, which is taking effect, I believe, in July. Mandatory labeling of GMO food. And quite honestly, with the Vermont law, every single manufacturer is going to have to change their labels, because if a product gets in Vermont that has GMO food in it and it's not labeled, then class action lawyers are going to totally go after them. With the DARC Act failing to pass, it's going to force GMO labeling in America. I mean, I can't fathom what a huge victory this is. And that was completely codified 2 days afterwards when General Mills announced that they were going to label all of their food that has genetically engineered products in it.
Yeah, isn't that
something? Because that's the only way they can comply with the Vermont law. It's humongous.
It's just amazing because, you see General Mills about to do that. And the law, first of all, something you don't hear very often, it was defeated in a bipartisan way in the Senate. You don't hear that word very often, and Andrew's nodding. And the argument for that law is like, well, we can't have each state doing its own labeling of GMOs because there'll just be chaos in the market. I actually heard Roberts talk about that, Senator Roberts out of Kansas. It's interesting how certain – factions want state rights, except when they don't get their way, when it gets in the way of big food and that sort of thing. So I think the other thing they're scared of is in the Northeast, several states have passed laws that won't go into effect until the other states go into effect. It's like we're all waiting to see what happens here. So I think there's going to be a chain reaction here, Jim, with the Vermont law happening this year, and I think other states will step up, and suddenly we're in a whole new realm where you have to identify GMOs in food. And my feeling on it, and I said it last week, is if you don't think it's a problem, then let's let the market decide. Okay, put the
label, exactly.
put the labels on, and if folks don't like it, they don't have to buy it. And you know, and the industry is afraid the whole thing will collapse. But as you noted, there are big companies already headed in that direction.
I always like to say transparency is the backbone of the local and regional food movement. And transparency matters whether you're talking about large agriculture or small, but small is really winning in that area, and we're going that direction. You know, you've got me thinking about a conference that Jim Slama and I were at about a month ago in D.C. And what I noticed, and this is my industry, perception or observation rather, is about this movement. Is big food is starting to change the way they talk and then in the way they act. That gap between what they say and what they do is getting smaller, and you're seeing companies like General Mills really start to say, you know, they're not saying, oh, we're thinking about it, we might do it, we're going to do it in a few years, or you know, now putting claims on and setting a bar for themselves. And so what I'm seeing is we've got hotels that are customers of ours. We've got other distributors, major distributors that you've all heard of that we're talking to about partnering up. And I can tell you that the sentiment and the knowledge and of the way they talk is changing. The tides have shifted back in the other direction.
And it sounds as though conferences like the Good Food Festival have played a large role in that change in policy.
Well, I think certainly people have embraced that they want transparency. They want to know where their food comes from. They want to trust it, which in that movement in, you know, Chicago and New York and San Francisco, in Omaha, Nebraska, I mean, it's really happening all across the country. And certainly we've been helpful here in the Midwest, and I think that, you know, some of the market making, you know, McCormick Places, now McCormick Places at the conference at the White House with Andrew and I, you know, last month, you know, they're sourcing 42% of their food from local and sustainable sources now. I mean, who would have thought? The largest convention center in America. U.S. Foods, the second largest distributor in America, they're really embracing local and sustainable food. And you know, Dennis Jeunesse, their key guy in that, he's going to be speaking on Friday at the trade show. So, you know, huge moves really across the board, but it's really driven by people who want to trust their food. They want to know the source. They want transparency. And it's an exciting time. And with this major shift on GMO labeling, I think it's going to focus now a lot of the attention towards, you know, how do we build more regional sustainable food systems where people have access to product that they know and trust.
That is Jim Slama, who is the president of Family Farm. He's the founder of the Good Food Festivals. Andrew Lutze is in the studio with me. Beth Botts is still here. WC Turk, we're on Q4 Radio if you're listening, and that's www.QUE4.org. And we found out earlier today, yay, that we're on the TuneIn app, so you can use that as well. In fact, I'm watching Bill. I'm thinking he might be doing that. And we're talking policy. We're talking a Good Food Festival. Let's since we are talking some of this policy, you are part of a panel, Andrew, that is called Good Food Trends, and Jim was just talking about some of those trends. What is it you're going to be discussing?
Yeah, I've got a great panel and that I'm a part of, and I feel like local foods is in a unique position to observe trends in the food industry. We are a distributor, so we work with hundreds of farmers throughout the Midwest, and we also work with some of the best chefs in Chicago. So we know what they're demanding and we know what farmers are growing. And then in our store, we know what the home consumer is asking for and what their buying habits are. And so we've seen the appetite for different foods change over time. And
no pun intended.
Yeah. I'm good at the accidental pun. That's my, that's my thing. So, you know what, one of the things that, I will bring up and what we've seen is our hottest growing segment of customers right now is hotels. And talking about the major players, the Marriotts, the Hyatts,
really?
And the Renaissance, and they're all investing heavily right now in changing their food service. You know, the hotel business,
yeah,
the banquet hall business, the kiosks, the grab and go kiosks in their hotels are all selling points for guests these days.
So how did this happen? How did the hotels get on the bandwagon?
Well, you know, I think everyone's listening to the customer. And it's mm-hmm. it's how quickly they can react and how much resources they have to commit to it. And a lot of these hotels, they've been, you know, they do have the resources, the capital to make changes, and they do it fairly frequently. Every 10, 20 years, they're able to make shifts. And so what we've seen is one of our hotel customers has. And I just saw the menu for it. It's farm names on your room service menu. So you can order in your room and get, you know, bacon from Gunthorpe Farms, for example, or chicken from one of our farmers, Cameron Farms. And
I have to stop you there because this is a sea change because a lot of us who've been in hotels over the years know that the food is not necessarily – did never seem to be at the top of their priority list, mm-hmm. I think it's in a lot of hotels it's really uneven, and you don't know, you know, it might be great and it might be awful, mm-hmm. And to know that they're actually going down this road and locally sourcing is a good thing.
Yeah, and you know what I like to see is when big businesses make these changes because, you know, if you've got the 25 person restaurant who's leading a trend, that's great. We need that person and that's a big part of the movement. However, when we're talking about changes on the national level, when big players like Dennis from US Foods or in the case of the Marriott or the Hyatt here in Chicago or the Renaissance, you know, they're buying really large amounts of food. And that's when you're talking about getting better, healthier food into the mouths of more consumers. But also, I think about the environment in our region. They're supporting our farmers. They're putting money back in their pockets. So, that's good for our regional economy. And then, secondly, we're talking about environmental practices on the farm that are vastly different. What I like to say, and you might, understand this given the gardening focus of this,
sure.
is you put more nutrients back in the soil than you take from it.
Leave the soil in better shape than you found it. Mm-hmm. Leave the land in better shape than you found it. All of that stuff. Yeah, putting, you know, the idea of fewer chemicals, more cover crops, mm-hmm. Just different ways of working the land. Beth, you know what we're talking about here.
When settlement started in the Midwest in the mid-19th century, we had the richest soil in the world. And then as farming got more elaborate and more mechanized and more industrialized, we basically stripped all the nutrients out of that soil in a few decades. And now we have to put it back in. So, you know, do you put it back in by just adding chemical elements, or do you put it back in by trying to add more organic matter, by trying to actually enrich the soil and bring it back closer to the natural ecosystem that it once had? And that's what small local farmers try to do because they're aware that there are greater complexities to the soil than just the amount of phosphorus and nitrogen mm-hmm. it has in it.
I have this book that I got last year, and I'm going to have around the show. It's taken me too long to, I've got this pile of books here, actually brought the pile with me of all the books I want to get. This, it's one, it's called The Soil Will Save Us. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not, no.
Kristen
Olson.
No. Yeah, it's a very cool book. And she talks about just the different ways that scientists and not scientists, you know, are looking at the soil and trying to reduce, you know, make them carbon sinks again and reduce that in our atmosphere and take away the degradation that we have imposed on our soil. We don't need another Dust Bowl in the United States. And I think that the local food is leading the way, as you pointed out, Andrew.
Yeah, and, you know, I think about my family's farm, Wasita Farms in Door County, Wisconsin, and organic pastured cattle, hogs, and poultry, to give both my family and family farmed a shout out. My dad's on a panel on Saturday, hosted along with Michael Cornick from DMK and Dan Rosenthal from Soprafina Markets. And anyways, you know, the way that we think about manure on a small and mid-sized farm, that's not a problem. It's when we have factory farms and it's all in one place. Yeah. Well, it's a problem. So the animal waste from our farm is actually building organic matter where you know, spreading it out over the fields and then the cows are eating that grass in the next season or, you know, if it's in the spring, they're eating it in the fall. And that's what's contributing to a healthier food system. And all the farmers throughout the Midwest that are small and mid-sized, you know, their kids are picking these vegetables, even if they do use some pesticides, like some of our fruit farmers in Michigan have to, otherwise they risk losing the whole apple crop in a week. And I really respect that, but I also know that they're looking out for their own families and they're going to use those applications very prudently because they know their kids are picking the apples that they're selling at the market.
I'm just looking at some of the speakers that you've got on Saturday as well, because like I said, this is usually when a lot of the folks show up, the regular folk like us, like me. You've got grassroots food activism, and transforming school food and the value of local food. These are just some of the seminars. The true cost of good meat. You've got a film screening, the Farmer's Road.
Wes Gerald and Leslie from Prairie Fruits Farm. Awesome goat cheese and goat gelato and organic fruits. The fine film, Wes and Leslie. Wes will be there along with the filmmaker, John Murray.
The chefs. Of course, Rick Bayless will be there on Saturday. And
Paul Kahn's getting the Good Food Chef of the Year Award.
Oh, yes. I
he's
have
going to be doing
that.
Workshop along with Josh Culp and Christine Sikowski from Honey Butter Fried Chicken, focusing on Pilot Light, which is a nonprofit that Paul and Jason Hamill and Matthias Mergers and some other chefs created to develop curriculum for Chicago Public Schools. It's a very integrated curriculum. The food is kind of the center of it, but, you know, they apply it to math or they apply it to civics or history or other things. It's a very cool program, and they're going to be featuring that.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the gardening track here. There's three-season container gardening, square-foot gardening, beneficial bugs versus pests. These are all seminars that are on Saturday. Soil blocking, a fun and easy way to start seeds. Seed saving, season extension in Chicago, spring seed sowing, just for those folks who want to get out there and do it now, terrariums and other stuff. So, as I said,
good food is good medicine with some real experts from University of Chicago and Northwestern. Very exciting panel. Also, Lamanda Joy, for all your gardeners, she'll be there from the Peterson Garden Project. On the grassroots food activism panel at 10:30.
That's great. It's fabulous stuff. So go to goodfoodfestivalswithans.com and you can get more information. I will still, if anybody has heard all this and they want to get involved and want to get a couple of ticks, send me a tweet, send me a notice on Facebook, and I'll make sure that that happens. Jim Slama, thank you so much for doing this. And Andrew, thank you for shooting down the road here and saying hi.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Jim, I will see
Thanks,
you on
Mike.
Saturday. Take care now.
Look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Bye. And you can hang out for a second if you want, Andrew. I got a little business to take care of. And then Rick DeMaio weather is coming up in just a second on the Mike Novak Show on Q4. Now, if you followed my nomadic career on radio over the past decade or so, you've noticed that one thing remains constant: my association with Chicagoland Gardening magazine. In fact, I have a fellow writer and editor sitting here. I'm not an editor. I'm just a writer. But
yes, I used to be – this is Beth Botts. I used to be a senior editor at Chicagoland Gardening, and I still write for them from time to time. I think I have a story in the current issue.
You probably do. She writes great stuff. No matter what I've written in more than 13 years in my column on the Inside Back Page, they haven't fired me yet. And I hope I didn't just curse myself. The March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening is out, and it features an article by a guy who was on the program just last week, Mr. Brown Thumb, a.k.a. Ramon Gonzalez, about Ginkgo Organic Gardens in the Uptown neighborhood of Chicago. That's just one of a number of great articles, columns, and regular features. Beth Botts, as she said, probably has one in there, too. We don't remember, and I will look. And I haven't even mentioned the extremely useful resource guide, which comes out only once a year and which tells you how to find everything horticultural, from garden centers to arboreta to seeds to books to classes to you name it. Chicago Land Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Whether you're in Chicago, other parts of the Midwest, or the South, call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I told you I can't make the split. Jim, can you record the talk back? Record that, Jim. Bet.
Hey, did you know that Genesis is the Midwest's largest source of airbrush supplies? Find out more at ChicagoAirbrushSupply.com. ChicagoAirbrushSupply.com, or stop into their showroom, 2525 North Elston, and say that you heard about them on Q4 Radio, and you'll get an extra 10% off their already discounted prices all month long. Genesis, Chicago's only privately owned art supplier, serving all of Chicago's artistic framing and drafting needs since 1946. Meteorologist Rick DeMaio, how you doing, buddy?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Great.
Happy spring.
Oh, that's right. We actually have the real deal. When did that start?
Last night, somewhere around 10 o'clock or something like that. I really don't keep track of that. But we hit the solstice or the equinox button last night.
But you can tell it's spring in Chicago because it was like, 30 degrees, 25 degrees last night or something.
Yeah, I guess it was. And, we had a little bit of rain and we had some thunder snow with some hail this past week and the possibility of some snow showers yesterday. And nice weather today, thunderstorms tomorrow, maybe some snow after that. So I guess that's a real way of looking at, what really is spring like around here.
Yeah, and Bill Turk here, is stepping up to the mic again because he asked me something earlier in the day, and I thought it was a pretty good question, and I want him to pose it to you.
This weekend, there was a crash at Rostov-on-Don, a Middle Eastern flight, a Saudi flight, I believe, that went down at 7:37. That looks like they had them in a holding pattern for a couple of hours, and so my initial theory. Or off-the-cuff theory is that they probably built up ice on the wings, and that combined with the high winds that they were seeing contributed to that crash. That all remains to be seen, but that's what I'm throwing out there. But it brought to mind something else. We seem to be having a lot more high wind days. At least that's my perspective, and I'm wondering if there's any validity to that perspective, if we are having more extreme wind days than we have in the past.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point about, the inability for a plane to land at a runway when the wind is, exceeding cross speed limits. And obviously they have to do a go-around. They put them in a hold. They may have 45 minutes of hold fuel, and they hold them for 46 minutes, and they say, we can't hold anymore, we have to land, and they probably built up some ice on the wings, and obviously that does a whole bunch of things with the ability of the airplane to stay afloat, and that probably led to it, although it sounds like they may have just misshot the runway compared to, a normal slant landing where they probably came in maybe a little bit too low. I don't know. I didn't really look at some of the data.
They came in wing and nose first. They nosed in, and it was the plane was completely devastated in that crash.
Yeah, and one of the things they do when they go back and they look at airplane crashes, they try to put together the pieces. If it seems like the nose was obviously damaged more so than the tail, then clearly it came in too low, and there may have been a downburst, or he may have lost. May have gone into a stall. I know that when Air France 447 went down, they determined that the nose did not hit first. The belly of the plane hit, which meant that particular plane, which was going from Rio to Paris, hit super cooled water, iced up, extreme turbulence. The airplane basically went into a stall. And instead of going into the ocean nose down, it basically almost tried to land on the water.
Yeah.
Not tried to, but that's probably what happened. But getting back to your initial question about more wind, one of the things that Jennifer Francis from Rutgers University published about 4 years ago, and I saw her talk at the AMS conference in Austin a few years ago, actually was in Phoenix, was an increase in what we call meridional flow. Zonal flow is when the airstreams generally move around the Earth's northern latitudes between 30 and 60 degrees north in a more westerly direction. But climate change has induced a much higher ocean heat content. And during the wintertime, when you build up, colder land temperatures, more widespread snow cover, you end up having a colder surface over the land and a warmer surface over the water. So the temperature gradient, instead of being more west to east, becomes more north-south. So think of like the Pacific Ocean and North America, with the Pacific Ocean, kind of juts northward and North America juts southward. So you end up having a more wavier pattern, and that adds to the fact that some of these storm systems that we've been seeing generate more wind in the north-south direction as they're moving west to east. And what Jennifer Francis did, and was actually published in National Geographic, or I should say republished, about 4 months ago, they did an excellent article about decreasing Arctic sea ice. Is the sea ice goes away in two ways. The first one is you warm up the atmosphere, and the ice just doesn't have a chance to, form a larger surface area or deeper thickness, so we call it volume. But when you have more of these north-south winds, what you end up doing is you push these storms a little bit further north, so instead of the ice basically remaining kind of steady state, the Arctic sea ice begins to move around. So you look at Lake Michigan, and sometimes you go, wow, where'd all the ice go? All it did was it moved from one side of the lake to the other. You go, now why is it back here? Well, it's just moving from the west to the east. So these up and down, more meridional zone of flows in the atmosphere is the second, and I think the more important reason for why the Arctic sea ice, as well as the ocean currents, have been so highly variable the last 10 to 15 years, Wayne.
Interesting. So it's not an empty impression. We really are seeing.
Not at all.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. And that was something that I raised about 10 years ago. I was at a talk, and the person was talking about This is a meteorologist giving the talk at the AMS local weather monthly seminars here in Chicago. And he talked about how there's going to be less Arctic sea ice. And I said, if that's the case, by opening up the Arctic earlier, you set it up for producing more sea effect snow in northern sections of Canada and particularly in northern areas of Greenland.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I didn't think about that. So what's happening is we seem to be having more of these early season normal cold outbreaks over water that is now exposed in late September and early October. Thus, you're developing an earlier segment of snow that begins to develop over northern Russia and also northern Canada. And some people, will climate deniers, will say, why are we getting more snow here? You told me it was going to warm up. Well, what's happening is you have less sea ice. You have more ocean surface that's now available to be converted into snow, and you're developing an earlier snowpack. Now, the key is not to look at simple numbers of snowpack, but to see where it's developing. So if you have a lot more snowpack developing in the middle of North America and not over the edges, you end up having a much colder region right. in that one northern section, which allows the jet stream to become more of a wavy jet stream, if you kind of follow that line of reasoning.
And we're seeing globally that the climate change is variable and how it affects different parts of the world.
Yeah, and what occurs is the change of the sea ice induces the higher rates of variability and thus changes the type of storm track that you have in certain parts of either North America, parts of Europe, and also Russia as well. So that's why there's a lot more into looking at just numbers. It's also looking at what those numbers are describing, where those numbers are. And then again, the variability. I was just looking at soil temperatures. Soil temperatures today at the Chicago Botanic Garden actually showed 50 degrees, 4 inches underneath the top of the soil that's bare, meaning that you don't have any grass or any of the trees on top of it. Where the soil is actually covered up with dirt and, I shouldn't say with dirt, but with grass and other sorts of plants and other sorts of things that shrubs and tree roots and things like that, it's different ways of looking at it, is about 45 degrees. That's pretty warm. For this time of the year, usually you have snow on the ground and you also have, you know, a high rate of compacted, you know, cold kind of icy soil. So if you look back at our snow for this year, okay, O'Hare Field had less snow than normal, but most of it came early in the year. Most of it came with one storm. If you look at the number of days of snow that we had, the number of days of below zero, or the number of days of or hours of below zero, it was very little snowfall, very little days of cold weather, and therefore the ground is basically saying to the rest of the planet, I'm warm, I'm going to start to produce, you know, energy that goes through the roots of plants and trees and things like that.
Yeah.
So I always go back to years ago, we figured out that the Earth didn't really rotate around the sun the same. So we had to put every 4 years an extra date in the month of February. So this is science realizing that things are not working out. So we changed something. we didn't deny it. We added the day in February to make our year actually work out in the Gregorian calendar. I don't know why we can't do it now, why there's still so much denying about certain things, but it keeps on happening.
Well, the reason that the plants are coming up now is because they've had the extra day this year, right?
Well, yeah.
There you go.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody got the joke. Thank you.
I don't mean
to oversimplify things, but it actually is pretty simple. It's amazing that there's still so much debate that goes on. It's quite odd.
Yes, Beth?
Yes, Rick, we actually ended up having this sort of philosophical discussion in the office about whether the leap day meant that we were actually going to have more spring.
We had one more day of winter,
long-winded explanation involving, you know, the rotation of the sun and, you know, all this stuff. And
of the Earth, yeah.
And they basically said, so the answer is yes, right? What's your take on that, Rick?
No.
Did we have more spring this year?
No, he said. He just said we had more winter because we had one more day.
Daylight savings time gave us more spring.
And by the way, I knew there was some way we
this
were.
This past week at the Loyola University Climate Change Conference, Naomi Klein, who's an amazing author and great speaker, gave a very inspiring 90-minute talk about capitalism and climate change and how they can work together. But I thought what was more interesting was the prelude up to his speech, which was done by Father Robert Garozzini, who really was the visionary in the Institute of Environmental Sustainability. And if I don't know if you guys know this, but Loyola University, a campus on Lakeshore, basically along the Lakeshore of Chicago, in that wonderful little east section of Rogers Park, is the fourth greenest university in the United States. That's amazing. We don't have the type of, you know, hills that Pepperdine University has over the West Coast or the beautiful, you know, 10 months of greenery that Cal Berkeley has. This is Loyola University Chicago, and it was Garanzini's vision was to create a university in an urban environment that could say, yes, we can make these changes work, and yes, we can make students think differently about the environment, and yes, we can make things more sustainable. And he really went back to what Pope Francis said a couple of years ago, how we all need to work for the betterment of not so much the people who have stuff already, but for those who don't and have it much harder to get it once they lose it. And it's all about really sustaining your natural resources. And it was one of those moments where you look up and there was almost like a halo over his head when he was talking.
I actually went to see another talk on Wednesday. It was a busy week. My buddy from my days at the Chicago Recycling Coalition, Carl Zimmering, was speaking the same time that Naomi Klein was. He was at Columbia. And he's written a book called Clean and White, A History of Environmental Racism in the United States. Bill, you might be interested in this.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have him on the show to talk about that. But congratulations to Loyola for doing it right and having a great environmental studies department. But, you know, more of these universities are. Roosevelt, my friend Mike Bryson over at Roosevelt is mm-hmm. and Carl Zimmering, who wrote this book. They started the environmental studies there too. So more and more colleges and universities are getting on board with this. And Ashley Williams, who's not here today but was here last week and will be showing up on the show from time to time, is studying environmental law or actually policy.
Policy
and wants to become an environmental lawyer.
I think, Mike, that's the hardest part. It's easy for me as a scientist to say these are the things that are happening. These are the things that are of a result. And if you see more things like this occurring, you will get this. It's easy from my standpoint to provide the if, then, and else. It's much harder to implement and to advocate that. So from what you were talking about, the policy, the ethics behind it, how it's covered in the media, that I think is a really hard part. I remember getting an email from Nancy Tuffin, who's the director of the Institute of Environmental Sustainability, after the COP21 adopted, you know, their agreement, which was quite interestingly shot down by not only James Hansen but also Naomi Klein, because it really wasn't a treaty. And when John Kerry was over in Paris at the COP21, he said, he goes, now don't make this a treaty, only make it an agreement. They go, why? We need to make it a treaty. He goes, because if you make it a treaty and I bring it back to the U.S. Congress and the Senate, it's going to get shot down. And that was such a shame that he had to say that, but he was right. And it wasn't playing politics. It was realizing that, you know, you're up against a group of people that basically going to say no to everything that either the Democrats or the president is trying to, you know, advocate in a positive way. And,
you know, I tell you what. How about we get a weather forecast here, Mr. DeMaio?
The pattern has turned cold across the middle to the eastern half of the United States.
As you said it would. You predicted it last week.
We talked about this last week. This is that wavy pattern that always develops in the month of March. So it's tough to go out longer than 5 days. So warm the first half of the week, much cooler the second half of the week. The all-important precipitation forecast does bode well for us getting some additional rainfall, which we can actually use a little bit Wednesday night into Thursday, Mike. So it'll be nice to see us, you know, get some moisture into the ground. You know, the ground, as you know, this time of the year really likes it when it can percolate that rainfall down about 4 inches or so. So we'll see how things work out for the best for the second half of the week, but at least the first half is starting out nice.
Rick DeMille, talk to you next week. Next Saturday, let's remind people that next Saturday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., the Mike Novak Show in absentia will be broadcasting on your show.
On my show.
On your show, but he will be here holding down the fort. And I, and again, I really appreciate that.
Can I say that my wife texted me and says that you're her Sunday morning Garrison Keillor?
Aw, that is – I like your wife. I might like her better than I like you, but no, that's not true. I like you.
More than likely.
All right, we're done here today. Again, we went a little overtime, but
but you can do that.
We can do that. We have the flexibility.
Can I tell folks to stick around at noon coming
yes,
up?
Yes, do some plug-in. Go ahead.
Yeah, is the Roots Connection with our own Papa D. So the smoothest reggae, ska, and dub show anywhere, and that's going to be from noon to 3, followed by comic Andy Lutzen with Two Guys, One Joke.
I love the name of that show. That is just
it's a fun show.
Yeah. And, you know, I had congratulations. You know, I was listening to your show yesterday, and you do a great job and on the Helter Skelter show.
Thank you.
I was amazed you actually had a Hillary supporter on. That was pretty entertaining.
We had a nice back and forth.
You did.
You
had
Hillary
a really good back and forth.
Yeah,
it was quite good, yeah. Quite good. So you want your political commentary tinged a little bit or you know, a little bit to the left here, that this is a good place to do it. All right, we're going to get out of here, and I'm going to play something. A buddy of mine, Catherine Gallagher, is the voice behind this, and actually the arranger behind this. It's kind of fun, and it's a way of saying goodbye. Tune in next week, Saturday, 11 to 1 on the Helter Skelter
Special
Show
time.
for our remote broadcast from the Good Food Festival and Conference. And then I'm back next Sunday, 9 to 11, the Mike Novak Show on Q4 Radio.
You put your... self in. You put your whole self out. You put your whole self in. And you shake it. That's why.